You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. That's right, folks, it's time and we are going to the movies. We are talking all about Suicide Squad, the DC Comics adaptation of the comic book of the same name. So it's gonna be interesting because we got to see some characters finally on the big screen that we've been waiting for quite some time actually. And talking about waiting quite some time, I think a Mr. Mike Gordon was in heaven about a certain Harley Quinn.
Howdy!
How are you, sir?
I am pretty good. It's one of those, right now, it's the few weeks before Dragon Con, so it's kind of like, you're kind of on that, I don't know how to describe it. It's just sort of like you're like waiting, it's sort of like you're at a gate waiting to board an airplane that just... you have no idea where it's going.
Exactly.
It's crazy. It's just like
you never know what's going to happen at Dragon Con.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, you're going to have a good time.
You hope. You hope, because you know, I don't think anyone really can have a bad time at Dragon Con.
Well, I mean, I know people who have, and no offense to them, because I've always had a great time, even if I've had some bad experiences there, but. Overall, it's been it's my favorite show of the year. It's my favorite time of year. The only thing is leading up to it is a little stressful because I've got a lot of stuff to get done before Dragon Con. So I want to make sure that I have books and all that kind of stuff at the table and everything else.
Well, exactly. So no sleep for Mike Gordon before Dragon Con.
Yeah, because that's definitely a show that will allow me to relax.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Have a bucket of rum in his hand, and he'll be happy. He'll go to Trader Vic's, and he'll be, Mai Tai, damn it, now. So I think that'd be cool. And speaking of Mai Tais and crazy stuff, we want to hear from you guys. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. We actually have a big announcement at the end of the show about maybe a get-together at Dragon Con. So we might be breaking that news here on this podcast. So wait and hear. And of course, if you haven't seen Suicide Squad yet, we're going to be spoiling the hell of it. So go see it. Put us on pause. We'll be waiting until you get out of the movie. And now we're going to the Geek Seat segment.
Okay. And joining us now from the open road is Eric Zala, one of the Raiders guys. Welcome to the station.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For those our listeners out there who may not have heard of you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am the director of the fan film Raiders of the Lost Ark, the adaptation, done by Chris Strompolis, Jason Lamb, and myself in the 80s, growing up in Mississippi, shot-for-shot remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And we finally, it took us 7 years, but we finally finished. And actually, we're touring around the country right now in promotion of a documentary about this, what's turned out to be a 35-year saga, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made, so from Draft House Films. So it's been a fun ride.
Absolutely. I got a chance to see the documentary as well as the adaptation on the big screen a couple weeks ago in Athens. And I have to say, both are amazing. And it's a true testament to, I don't know, inspiration and endurance in a lot of ways.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been quite a wild ride. Certainly, if we knew when we were 12 years old when we started that it was going to take 7 years plus, I think we would have been scared to death.
Well, of course, you must have known. Well, that's true. You probably didn't know exactly what kind of undertaking it was going to be, but sort of, yeah, if you could go over just a little bit about the genesis of the idea to remake Raiders.
Absolutely. So Back in the early 80s, Raiders Lost Ark, of course, came out in 1981. And a buddy of mine, Chris Trompolis, saw it and got this harebrained idea to remake it shot for shot. And I had borrowed Chris's Raiders comic book on the bus, and he gave me a call and said, "Hey, I'm doing this shot-for-shot remake of Raiders Lost Ark. Do you want to help?" I was 12, he was 11. And I imagined all the sets were built, everything was taken care of. I'd just kind of walk on and help. And little did I know, the only thing Chris had done at that point was buy the script from Malden Books and cast himself as Indiana Jones, as any good producer will do. But we, kids don't know what they can't do. And so we launched ahead with the impossible task of remaking Raiders on our allowance. And, 1 year turned into two, turned into three, and stretched out into 7 years. We finished actually, when I was a sophomore at NYU Film School. But we finally finished all scenes, I should say, except for one, the airplane scene, which eluded us back when we were kids. And so, it took a break for a little bit, like 14 years.
Right. As you do.
Until it was discovered quite by accident in 2003. Eli Roth put a copy in the hands of Steven Spielberg, who wrote us a letter of appreciation thanking us for our very loving and detailed tribute, which was beyond anything we could possibly imagine. And we began touring for the better of a decade. Venues around the world would kind of seek us out. We didn't advertise, but flew us out to tell stories, give Q&As about the making of this crazy little blockbuster that could. There was a Vanity Fair article, a book, and then most recently a documentary. And that inspired us as adults, we're now in our mid-40s by now, to go back and do the only scene that had eluded us as kids, and that was the airplane scene. The famous scene where the bald, muscular German is chopped up by the propeller and the plane blows up.
Spoilers!
Yeah. We actually did a Kickstarter campaign, raised $58,000 to go back and finally get the band back together and do this right, and do that one scene that we could never pull off as kids, build a flying wing in a mud pit in Mississippi and blow it up. And the documentary actually covers that struggle, sort of a then and now parallel cross-cutting. And so that kind of brings you up to today.
It is amazing. And one thing that really struck me from my own days in the 80s of making films on video is that we didn't really, I didn't have any editing equipment. So we had to film things in camera. So I had to film things in order, et cetera, et cetera. But you had the luxury of having editing equipment. So you could film whenever and whatever you needed to do sort of at that pace and kind of go accordingly. But also, what the documentary shows is that you've got a lot of footage that you have making of the adaptation footage.
Yeah.
Like behind the scenes stuff, a lot of behind the scenes footage.
Yeah, it's true. We supplied the documentarians, Jeremy Kuhn, who produced Napoleon Dynamite, and co-director Tim Skousen, with about 40 hours of outtakes. As you might imagine, through 7 summers of shooting, lots of footage, and thank God we had all those Betamax and VHS tapes digitized some years ago. And Jason, as cameraman, he would oftentimes, when not shooting, kind of turn the camera around and sort of impromptu interview people, which the doc guys loved. It's almost like they could travel back in time and interview the teenage selves.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really used some really amazing moments back in the day in the doc. We're really happy with that.
Absolutely. Now, the documentary is available. You're touring it now. Is it? I assume that there's a plan for that to be released.
Yes. It's currently out in limited theatrical release and also on demand for the to support the. Well, I'll start with the on-demand. You know, currently it is available through typical on-demand options. That is iTunes, Hulu, Vimeo, Amazon. You can rent or buy it at this time. And the Blu-ray is actually coming out later this month, as of the 16th, with some bonus footage. But beyond that, it's also released in theaters currently. And we are, I'm actually on the road, as you alluded, doing the Raiders Follow Your Dreams tour, which is a 64-city tour all across America. We've so far hit the Great Pacific Northwest, the Midwest, the East Coast, the Southeast, Florida, and we're just now taking a breather in our hometown of Mississippi, but are continuing on through the end of September, doing what's typically a double feature. First, we show the documentary, and then I give a Q&A about the craziness that occurred and the fan film. So all of which, you know, the complete tour schedule can be found at RaidersGuys.com.
Awesome, awesome. And and so you said you're about halfway through that tour?
Time-wise, anyway. You know, we've been going at this breakneck pace about a different city a day, and thank goodness we're starting to slow that down a bit, and because there's so many cool places, so many amazing people and cinemas that we've visited, that we're able to linger a bit. So yeah, we've got about, oh gosh, a little less than half left, and then about two more months to go, August and September. And I should also mention we're also booked on a Comic-Con themed cruise in January. It's called Fan to See, and it's actually going to Cozumel, Mexico. So we'll also be on that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And looking at the remaining dates you have, it sounds like, you're going to be driving that RV all over the place. I mean, you're in, New Hampshire one day, and then a few days later, you're in Memphis, and then, yeah, you're in Phoenixville, and yeah, it's just like, wow.
It's been amazing. We're actually traveling in our tour, our Raiders Mobile, if you will. It's a 32-foot-long RV wrapped in the poster art. This has always been an adventure from the start, and continues to give new experiences. Every intersection we pull into, all eyes are on us with this this Raiders tour vehicle that we're in. But yeah, it's been absolutely wonderful. After this brief hiatus, our next stop is in Omaha, actually, at the Alamo Drafthouse there, which I understand is actually dressed up to look, the lobby looks like the Death Star from Star Wars.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just lost my train of thought. I had a question. Where was it? Sorry.
It's out in paper. Omaha kind of throws a lot of people. I totally understand.
It did. I was like, wait, Death Star, I'm trying to picture it in my head, and then everything else just left.
Death Star, cornfield, yeah. That'll mess with your head.
Absolutely, absolutely. So after this tour, what's next for you guys?
Well, you know, we shall see. There's, you know, Rolling Boulder Films, which is the production company formed by Chris, who plays our Indiana Jones, and myself. We've got a couple projects in the hopper that we are in early stages of developing. One is an original script. No Temple of Doom, the adaptation. Let's just get that out of the way.
I'm not going to do that because I bet he gets get that all the time. Like, now we're going to remake that.
Yeah, no, we've got our hearts set on this original story that we've worked on for better than a decade during, working on and probably every hotel room and airport gate in 13 years of touring with our film, seems like. It's a Southern Gothic action adventure called What the River Takes, universe we're really excited about. The second project is a book called by author Robert McGammon called Gone South, which we would love to see up on screen. And then there's the third project. Tim Skousen, co-director of the documentary about us, has reached out to us and has expressed interest in our production company producing his next film, which is envisioned to be a dark, cerebral, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic tale of survival. Our working title is The Flare. So So that's what I've got on the hopper.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, cool. Well, I think without any further ado, we're going to take you out of the driver's seat of that RV and put you into the geek seat. Mike, if you are ready.
I'm always ready, man. You know that. And, you know, sometimes the driver's seat of an RV can pretty much be a second for the geek seat.
I can see that.
Yeah, after your back is done with this, you'll feel like, God, I want to get back in that RV. All right, sir, are you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
All set.
What was your favorite geek out moment?
Oh, wow. There's been a lot of really amazing moments from this crazy journey that was never supposed to happen. If I had to pick one, it would probably be meeting my boyhood hero, Steven Spielberg. You know, when we long after we finished and we're all grown-ups, you know, actually, and the film was discovered by accident touring in Los Angeles, we got a call, and Spielberg wanted to meet us at Amblin the next day, and we did, and spent about 45 minutes with the man himself, talking about life and Raiders and movies, and he even showed us outtakes from Raiders and Temple of Doom, and even granted our request for a photo. You know, there's been many, many incredible moments, but I think that's got to be the pinnacle.
That is absolutely amazing. And I was thinking when I was watching the documentary that I'm like, why isn't there more of this? It's just a photo. Yeah. But I imagine that, that was pretty special. Have you heard from George or anybody else associated with Raiders?
You know, when we were, we did a screening in San Francisco, and some Skywalker Ranch employees invited us to do a private employee screening at Skywalker Ranch. And of course we said yes. Regrettably, George was in Japan at the time, apparently, touring with an exhibit of Star Wars stuff at the time, so we did not get a chance to meet him, but met the crew and the folks working at Skywalker Audio and at the ranch, and it was just amazing. We also, this is kind of like a runner-up to the favorite geek-out moment, we got to tour the Archives building and touch the original Ark of the Covenant prop.
Wow.
I know, right?
Okay, I'm in awe already.
Yeah. I didn't look inside, though. You got to say.
No. Shut your eyes. Yeah.
Say,
it was in a big warehouse.
Yeah, exactly. Got to save some moments, you know, from your childhood. But no, we've not met Mr. Lucas, but we, you know, thankfully have been able to operate under the good graces of Lucasfilm to this point.
Awesome.
That is awesome. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Well, I think probably, you know, after some time of watching Crystal Skull and kind of it's slowly sinking in that it was the least of the of the quadrilogy so far, you know, there's things to love, but I don't know that I love it as much as the rest of the canon, you know. I suppose that.
Okay, no, I totally understand that. What geeks you out the most?
Well, here's where hope springs eternal. You know, I am really excited that there's going to be an Indy 5 next year in which. Not only is Harrison gonna, you know, I'm gonna get to see Harrison in the hat and the jacket again, but also Spielberg directing and John Williams doing the music. You know, I'm in. I'm very much in. So I'm really geeked out at the thought that in our lifetime it's still possible to look forward to a new Indiana Jones movie from those guys.
I don't blame you. What turns your geek off?
You know, I suppose it would be this this current kind of sentiment among, you know, some in the fan community that we kind of own, the universe, you know, and can sort of dictate what should or shouldn't be in there. You know, when I originally became a geek, you know, back as a kid, I was, you know, really excited, looking forward to, you know, what the universe, you know, would give us, you know, what that next Indiana Jones sequel would look like. And, you know, as much as I've invested, you know, in my personal love of it, it remains a love and an admiration. I would not presume to dictate to the creators what they ought to do with their creation. So, you know, I mean, to each his own, and not everyone has to agree with me, but that would be my perspective.
Cool. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Gee,
that's going to be a hard guess there.
Yeah. I think you can probably guess this one, having spent my entire childhood with Indiana Jones being almost kind of like a surrogate father. Yeah, Indy.
Of course. So you want to meet Henry. Got it.
Well, since you were Belloc, I would think that would be a confrontation that might not go your favor.
Yeah, you know, Belloc actually crossed my mind, but then again, I have to remember, I can't play sympathies just because I played him in our adaptation. Probably Indy would be a better one to meet.
So I'm curious now, what fictional character would you like to meet the least?
I guess the one that I would least like to spend the time with on screen, and that probably would be the character of Mac from Crystal Skull.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
The man who switched sides more than almost anybody.
Yes, exactly. You're asking hard questions, so I'm telling it like it is.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Well, let's see. I'm not a spring chicken anymore, so you know, it's I'm not the first one to identify this one, but I have to say it's improv'd, but a classic. It's not the years. It's the mileage.
It becomes more and more true every day.
So true.
Oh, God. I felt that this morning. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Well, you know, harking back to the fact that we've got another Indiana Jones film to look forward to from Spielberg, Harrison, and Williams. God, to be somewhat involved in some way, shape, or form with the production of that, that would pretty much split my brain open.
Gosh, I don't even know if I want to ask the next one then. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
There will also be no remake of Crystal Skull from us anyway. Maybe someone else will pick up the torch.
Okay. Are you ready for your final question, Eric?
Yes.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, this one probably comes from way back when, and I probably haven't been able to articulate it. It harks back to, I think kind of kept the fire lit for the whole 7 years, you know, when we were remaking Raiders as kids. I think on some level, you know, for Chris, you know, he wanted to be Indiana Jones and wear the hat and fight the bad guys, and as director, I wanted to see, you know, what it would look like, and also, I think part of me wanted to have that impossible dream of traveling back in time and being there when Raiders was being shot back in 1980 in Tunisia. You know, I've read the making of Raiders Lost Ark, I've seen the PBS documentary on TV back when I was a kid, and, you know, our going back and doing the airplane scene now as adults was, I think, probably the closest I could come to this fantasy. I actually, after shooting the airplane scene as adults and recreating, you know, the straw hut, the tower, the airplane, the exit from the Well of Souls, we watched the Blu-ray, the making of footage, and, you know, the documentary cameras then showed the airplane scene set at a different perspective than we're used to seeing as fans. And it was, wow, cool. We actually kind of did it. We got the straw hut and the proper relation to the tower, to the well exit, etc. So, you know, but still, though, it would be awfully cool to travel back in time and be there with Spielberg in Tunisia shooting it. I have to bring my own food, though. I understand they all got dysentery, but aside from that, it's a cool thing to imagine.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, Eric, you've made it through the geek seat.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Mr. Mike Gordon, please tell the young man what he's won.
He has won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $60.42.
But only on the station.
Yeah, it's not going to help fund your next Kickstarter or anything. But we thank you so much. I definitely encourage people to check the documentary out, as well as the adaptation itself. If you can catch a screening, please do so. Eric, where can people go to find out more information?
Raiders, our website has the complete tour schedule. It's raidersguys.com.
It is I think a very fitting, a perfect way to celebrate the 35th anniversary of this amazing movie that inspired a lot of us. So you just captured that so well. So thank you for that.
Mike, thanks for that.
And thanks for your time here. And feel free to come back when you have other projects to promote, because we'd love to help you out that way.
Would love that. Thank you, guys.
All right, take care and be safe out there on the road.
We will do our best. Thanks, y'all. Bye.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Okay, auditions for the new Earth Station Who co-host. Take one. Go ahead.
Hello, Stonehenge. Who takes the Pandora Cup? Takes the universe. But, bad news, everyone. Cause guess who? Ha. Listen, you lot are all whizzing about. It's really very distracting. Could you all just stay still a minute because I am talking?
Not too shabby. Can you close this up?
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating over 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. You never know where the TARDIS is going to go next. Earth Station Who podcast can be found at www.earthstationwho.com. Earth Station Who is a proud member of the ESO Network. We are up on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace and we are done. Did I pass the audition?
We'll get back to you. Next!
Gentlemen, ladies, what if Superman had decided to fly down, rip off the roof of the White House, grab the president right out of the Oval Office? Who would have stopped him?
I want to build a team of some very bad people who I think can do some good.
Y'all jokers must be crazy. I'm not just one of y'all many
toys. What? Tell
me what to do. This is the deal. You disobey me, you die. Try to escape, you die.
You got a boyfriend?
You irritate or vex me.
I'm known to be quite vexing. I'm just forewarning you.
You die.
If they get caught, we throw them under the bus.
What a ride!
Let's play!
Come on, got some better attempts?
Light it up!
I love this guy.
Not good.
Don't forget, we're the bad guys.
Are you sweet talking me? All of that chit chat's gonna get you hurt.
The man in the back is ready to crack as he raises his hands to the sky. And the girl in the corner is everyone's gone. She can give you with a wink of her eye.
What you gonna do?
You wanna see something?
Yo, yeah, I wanna
you
see.
You wanna see something?
Yes, I wanna see something.
I was just trying to get you there. No hard feelings, right? We good.
What you having?
Beer.
Whiskey.
What am I, 12?
How about you hot stuff?
Water.
That's a good idea, honey.
Hey, everyone, welcome back. Now we are here to finally talk about The Suicide Squad. This one was when we did our summer movie preview that we were all like, wonder how this one's going to be. There was, you know, still a lot of trepidation from Superman and Batman movie that was out back in the spring. So we were all like, DC has to come up with something big. So this week we're going to find out if they did. We have a great crew to talk to us this week. Of course, we have Alex Autry, our movie guy.
It's always a pleasure to be back here, man.
Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed the Jason Bourne episode. You guys did a great job with that one.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun talking about the whole series, not just about the new movie. And, you know, hopefully it will last for Suicide Squad longer than Jason Bourne did, because I think that movie went right down.
It fell off pretty quick, yeah, but that's okay. When a new action movie comes out the week after an action movie, that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we also have Ashley Pauls for the fourth week in a row. Wow.
That's right, because I think this might be a record for me.
This is. You did a great review, by the way, already up on the ESO website.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you guys having me back. And hey, wait a minute. Does anybody else hear those sirens?
Yeah, what is that?
Ah, crap.
Did he escape? Oh, right. Hi, JD.
I'm back, bitches.
Yes,
I made my way back into the station, and now you can't hide.
He's real?
Yes, folks, JD is real.
I'm real, and I'm back. They tried to lock me out, but it took a long time with the nail file, but I finally just drilled my way back in.
Finally, I just got an instant message from Bobby Nash. He says he's finally got the airlock to himself. Good, he could get some writing done.
Nice. You're welcome, Bobby.
Welcome back. How have you been?
I've been pretty good. How's everybody else?
Good. You know, 3 years in exile from the station.
I know. Yeah, well, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
That is true. That is so very true, as Ferris Bueller said. So, Suicide Squad. Who wants to go first with this one? What were your initial thoughts?
Well, we should let JD go first.
Yeah, let him, because, you know, he actually made it out of the station to go into the movies.
Exactly.
I think he kicked all kinds of ass.
I mean, this brought him out of hiding.
It was like he said, I've got to be on this one. I got to be on this one.
Basically.
Now, first of all, I guess we should also start, I mean, in terms of what's your sort of history with Suicide Squad? Is that something you were familiar with before? Is it something you were looking forward to as a movie?
I was vaguely aware of the Suicide Squad from the New 52 relaunch. I didn't read a lot of it, but I read enough of it that when they announced this movie, I was like, oh, cool. And then I saw the lineup of characters they were using, and most of it was okay. I didn't know who Enchantress was. I didn't know who El Diablo was. But overall, yeah, I knew most of the characters. I mean, of course, you know, Captain Boomerang and then the Batman villains were great. You know, I thought, oh, it's going to be cool to see Harley Quinn, you know, on the big screen. So I had a limited history, but I was very excited from the time they announced it, because I thought the bad guys coming together to do a good thing. I'm like, it's a weird kind of thing for the DC universe to take on this early, but I love that they were ballsy enough to do it.
It was interesting because, like JD just said, for them to bring in for their second, you know, movie from the official DCU continuity to be bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Not it being the Justice League or being the Wonder Woman movie or even a Batman movie. They brought in Suicide Squad.
You know, it was a crazy brave way to go, but look at the box office. I guess it paid off. I mean, it's such a cool idea that I was intrigued.
And I think it sounds risky, and yes, I mean, to your point, JD, I think that it was very risky. But the fact that their sort of, you know, ace card is Harley, with being, you know, as a character, she's probably more popular, one of the top five DC characters that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a little bit less risk when you look at that they're bringing that this is really Harley's movie.
I was going to say, it's more of hedging your bets, because yes, Harley is well known. And then as we get into the film, it's mostly a Will Smith movie. The fact is that in this case, they were doing their own Guardians of the Galaxy. Bad guys that we can appreciate, bad guys that we can enjoy. And JD mentioned, you know, the box office. It had an amazing Friday night. The previous, you know, winner for an August opening weekend was Guardians of the Galaxy with $95 million. Suicide Squad did $65 million on Friday, which is amazing.
That is awesome.
But the numbers fell off huge. Saturday was only 38, Sunday only 30.
Yeah, but so, you know, it's a weekend. People get busy, things happen. I mean,
but Saturdays are normally much better than Fridays. And that's huge.
And I think this got, you know, pelted by tomatoes, bad tomatoes. It really did. I mean, starting the campaign seemed like it started like a week ago, and for whatever reason, you know, it was on it was targeted, and I hate to make that sound contrived, but at this point, I've seen it happen with Batman v Superman, I've seen it happen with Ghostbusters, and now I've seen it happen with Suicide Squad. It almost does seem like there's there's foul play somewhere.
I think you could make that argument with Ghostbusters, considering the amount of hate that was spilled on it for an entire year before it came out. Not maybe so much with this one, but we'll get to that in a bit.
Sure. I'm sorry, because we haven't had Ashley talk.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, my introduction to Suicide Squad was actually when some of these characters showed up in the TV show Arrow. Amanda Waller had a small recurring part, and I believe there was an episode where they had a Suicide Squad go to do a mission.
Yes.
So that's kind of how I got to know these characters, and then I saw the trailers, and I thought the trailers just looked amazing. I was super excited for this. It looked different and fun, kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, but a little bit darker take. And I was really surprised to see the bad reviews come in, because this film had so much good buzz surrounding it. So it was kind of a shock to see that kind of take a nosedive. And I think, unfortunately for me, I was a little bit disappointed with the final product. I felt like all the elements didn't necessarily quite gel together, but there are some great characters, great performances, and there are some really entertaining moments. So I would definitely be in for seeing these characters again. To me, it just overall felt like the film had some choppy editing, and the script is maybe just a little bit rushed. But I'm curious to see what others thought of it, too.
It was the best Ghostbusters remake I've seen in years.
Oh, man. To Ashley's point, I hadn't really realized this, but I'm sitting here looking at the poster, and there are five characters that actually are in this movie that are in that have been already introduced in Flash and Arrow.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, because that was kind of the neat thing about it. But even on Arrow, originally when they were going to premiere the Suicide Squad on the show, they had talked about even having Harley in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they even had Tara Strong voice her in one.
Yeah, there was an Easter egg. Yeah, yes. And I you know, for me, my introduction, of course, to Amanda Waller was the Amazing Justice League Unlimited. Animated television show.
Okay. You know what? That was my introduction to her too.
Mm-hmm.
And then the image of her was a little bit. I don't know. When she showed up in that Green Lantern movie played by Angela Bassett, that should have been great, because Angela Bassett is great.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell happened? Now,
you can say that about that whole movie.
Well,
yeah, there's a lot to say about that whole movie.
Well, that's true, but she should have been one of the bright spots.
Yeah.
But she wasn't. Now, and then Viola Davis, she comes in, and that's what Angela Bassett could have done.
Yeah.
Had they written it that way.
Absolutely. I will totally agree with you on that. Viola Davis's performance as Amanda Waller is an absolute plus for this film.
I want to see her in a bunch more DC movies. She was just awesome in this.
And I guarantee you she'll be there. She'll be there. She's the Samuel L. Jackson of the DC universe. And I'm totally okay
with it. The evil version.
I'm totally
absolutely,
okay with it.
I'm fine with it. In fact, that's That's a ringing endorsement, because he was the connective threads for through the Marvel movies for a long time, and it'd be great if her and if her and Ben Affleck could be sort of the and I'm sort of wishy-washy on him as Batman, but it's cool that already he showed up here and he's going to get the Justice League together. So really, of course, I didn't expect Flash, but if they can have some more connective tissue through these, I think that would help greatly in building this world.
I got to say, bouncing off that too, Flash was a big surprise, and I'm so happy, not because I'm particularly excited about this version of Flash, but they had already established that four of these villains are Batman villains. Right. And then we see Batman take down a few of them. And so by the time we get to Captain Boomerang, I'm like, oh, they're just going to make him a Batman villain. To see the Flash apprehend him, to me, meant so much, because as we all know, at least the comic geeks of us, I mean, Captain Boomerang is an established member of the Suicide Squad throughout its history. I mean, he is a big member far as that goes. But he's also like a starring member of the Flash's Rogues Gallery.
I was gonna say it's kind of, he's a mainstay. He's kind of up there with Captain Cold and the Reverse Flash, and when you think of his Rogues Gallery, it's when I think of him, it's usually those three.
Well, exactly. Well, Captain Boomerang has been a member of the Suicide Squad in the comics since they actually were a supervillain group. Mm-hmm. Back when they first appeared in Legends, in right after Crisis.
Yeah, he was one of the founding members there, and so he's had this sort of dual role, much like Harley has recently. I mean, Harley was only, I think, added to the Suicide Squad with the New 52.
Yep.
I don't know if she was in it prior to that and now she's a staple of it as well. And Deadshot's been in there for a long time, but Deadshot's played double duty as well, because he's also been in Secret Six. So
yeah,
a lot of these characters do a lot of different things. But I think it was an interesting array of characters put together. But I think the most screen time, of course, went to Harley and Deadshot, Amanda, and then Captain Boomerang. And I've got to say, out of the four, I was really disappointed in Captain Boomerang's.
A lot of wasted character.
It just didn't do anything for me. There's a point where he walks out and then rejoins the team for no reason whatsoever, and you don't even care.
I don't know. The unicorn thing was hysterical. I don't know what the reference was or what the context for it was, but that made me laugh every time.
You might have to be Australian or something to know.
Maybe. I didn't know if it was an Easter egg to the comics or if it was just some random thing that they threw into the movie, but that was that was amusing.
Yeah, I gotta say, I really enjoyed the Flash appearance. It was at one point at the movie where we're going through everybody's backstory, and I'm just like, oh good, it's another backstory movie. And then the Flash showed up, and I sat up.
Well, that was so cool, because I didn't know. I knew that Batman was in it.
Yeah,
I had no idea Flash was in it.
And Flash being in it was a really good surprise. So, spoilers.
we tell people spoilers at the beginning of the show.
Oh, I know.
Well, I didn't know who Ezra Miller was until that Justice League trailer, and then he says, "I'm in. I need friends," and I'm like, "That's funny." When I see him in here, I'm like, "All right, you know what? I can totally see this guy as Flash now." So it was a jackpot of a surprise.
Yeah.
I did like how they did. I thought they did a great job of giving Harley her origin.
I love the sequences. They did everything right with Harley. I don't think they misstepped at all. I mean,
she played her to a scary good degree.
Yeah,
Mark, man, that girl can play crazy.
Margot was cool. And then the scenes, I mean, they had, you know, they brought Alex Ross's beautiful painting to life.
You know what?
That was so awesome.
You know what?
Love
that. When they showed the characters the first time and she was New 52, some people were like, she needs the jester costume. And I can't believe they threw that Easter egg in where we did see her in the cartoon.
It's in there twice.
It's actually exactly what I was going to agree with Alex. Because you saw it, she pulled it out of the bag when they gave
her the clothes. But we, you know, when we saw her actually wear it, I'm like, you know what? That was so cool they threw it in there. There's no way in hell that would have worked through the whole movie. And so, these purists that want everything to look the way it looked when they started liking it, it's like, some things really don't work. And her new 52 look worked a lot better than that would have worked.
Well, I mean, I think both would have worked, but I don't knock either one of them, but I'm glad that they did that. And I also really loved the scene between her and the Joker where she decides for herself to jump in the vat, and then he jumps in after her. And I was like, I just hadn't seen that before, and it summed up who they are.
Yeah, because he had this definite moment of, okay, she's gone. And you could actually see a brief moment of regret where he's like, ah, crap, now I got to go in after her. Which I thought was actually very well done.
What do you guys think of Jared as the Joker?
Let's put that on the table.
Yeah. That is the polarizing state question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's why I asked it.
I will say this. My sister, who is a casual comics fan, she will not admit to being a nerd. she loved the performance of Jared Leto as the Joker. I was a little underwhelmed. I didn't buy it. And that's because I've had Hamill. I've had Ledger. I've had Nicholson. I just didn't feel... If they want to say this is the original Joker, then yeah, I'm not buying it. If we find out later on it's Jason Todd, then I'm on board. But I just didn't feel it. I didn't feel that this is the homicidal clown prince of crime.
I love the Joker. He's one of my favorite comic book characters. He might very well be my very favorite comic book villain ever. But you know, all the comics I've read with him, he's been written so many different ways. It's my personal opinion that the Joker has never, in his many incarnations across television, the cartoons, the movies, I've never personally seen him handled wrong in a way that I thought did not befit the Joker, because he's got so many different sides to his character and personality, and that there's always been aspects of the different Jokers that have worked for me. I mean, Cesar Romero worked as the Wily Joker. You know, Jack Nicholson worked as the creepy hitman version. Mark Hamill worked as the
Shakespearean.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, thank you. The literary sort of, you know, the prose spouting Joker, and Heath Ledger worked as the batshit crazy version. And this one was a completely different Joker, and I bought it because I'm like, you know what? The crime lord Joker, this is exactly what he would look like.
And not just the crime lord Joker, but the Joker that's in love with Harley. None of the other versions that we've seen would have worked as well with Harley in this role.
No, you're right, because look at the way Nicholson's Joker, I mean, look, Alicia, what happened to her? You know, he wouldn't have gone for, you know, she was, I think she was Jack's girlfriend before that, but he treated her like shit. You know, there was definitely no love there. You know, she was just, you know, she was an experiment for him, and Ledger's Joker didn't have anybody he cared about. You know, so there's definitely no way he would have gone for Harley like that. So I think Jared Leto played it differently than Mark Hamill's Joker played with Harley Quinn, but there was definite love there. for both versions.
I was actually going to say kind of the same thing. I thought that he was the right Joker for this particular film. I thought it was an interesting new take, kind of a gangster. And like others have said, I thought it was really interesting the way he interacted with Harley. And I couldn't have necessarily have seen some of the previous incarnations of the Joker interacting with her in that way. So I think it was a good choice. And I'm curious to see him with Ben Affleck if they do a Batman film with him.
You know what? I think he when they do the Batman movie with Ben Affleck, he might not need to be the main villain like he's been in some of the other movies, but he has to show up, especially to expand on what they just did here, because they clearly have some sort of ideas for him. So I want to see it followed up on, and I want to see him, you know, because in this movie, Batman was just riding on top of the car. You know, we didn't get to see him have a conversation with him. I'll be excited to see that.
The thing is, I couldn't see this Joker do what he did to that costume in the Batcave. What we saw in Batman
okay.
Superman.
Okay.
Oh, you mean with the graffiti and all? No, you're right.
That does not seem like that would be that Joker. That would be the Heath Ledger Joker doing something like that.
Yeah. That's a good point.
You know, this one doesn't seem that maniacal. He doesn't seem, you know, this guy seemed more like of a gangster, like you said.
Dangerous.
Yeah. He's dangerous. Yes. But I don't see him being, like you said, batshit crazy.
No, he wouldn't have used the hand buzzer to make deep fried crispy mafioso like Nicholson. And he certainly wouldn't have the elaborate, the over-the-top machines and stage show that Hamill's Joker had. No, this guy's just, he's crazy dangerous, but it's like...
But would you see him beating the crap out of Jason Todd to death?
Well, you know what? I can see him shooting him, but I don't see him with the crowbar.
Here's the thing. This just hit me, and I apologize for interrupting on this. But this Joker, if he's the maniacal kind that we're talking about, it's Woody Harrelson from Natural Born Killers.
Oh, that's a good parallel.
Yeah.
That makes me want to watch that movie again.
That's a good point.
and the fact is that Woody Harrelson's character is the kind who would beat up Jason Todd with a crowbar. I've got it deep in my heart until they, you know, officially make a canon that it's not happening, that this is the Jason Todd that he has flipped. And that's one of the things that Bruce Wayne and Batman has had to deal with. Probably why he hasn't brought him in yet,
though he's tried. I've seen that theory, and though I appreciate the effort that's gone into it, I do find
you're not buying it.
Well, no, because I do find that a lot of it comes from the fact that a lot of people just can't stand the fact that Jared Leto was playing the Joker, so they have to come up with some rationale that it's not him, really.
Right. No, but
I also do think that, you know, there are some indications that you know it might be different, just because, I mean, you know, we get an older Bruce, but this Joker is really much younger than him. So how long really have they been going toe to toe? The other thing about it is that you know, even though you might say, well, that's not the Joker that would do this and that and the other thing, keep in mind that stuff that happened with Jason or whatever Robin it was, that outfit that we saw, that could have been a pre-Harley Joker. And the introduction of Harley could have changed a lot as far as he goes, at least, you know, for the moment. And that's, you know, that's a theory there. But, I mean, regarding the performance, I think Jared was pretty good.
Oh, I'm not saying he was bad by any means. I was just saying that I just didn't see that's that Joker.
For what he was given, he did a great job.
Yes.
For what he was given, he did a great job. I just don't... I think they went with this one because it was a case where you didn't have to sit there and go, why did they make a Superman movie like this? or why did they make a Batman movie like this? They made a movie about villains and gave them kind of all heroic aspects. Like, I loved the handling of Diablo.
Yes.
Oh, that was one of my favorites, too. Yeah. Yeah. He was great. He was absolutely, and one of the only completely rounded out characters.
No, I thought Diablo was one of the breakthrough characters in this movie.
Is he from the comic? I don't know who he is. I have no idea.
He's got comic history.
Yeah. I thought he was amazing. I thought he was a great character, and I'm kind of hoping that they didn't actually kill him off. Like, I'm kind of
more based off the giant Aztec version than the human version.
The gangbanger.
The gangbanger. That guy, a lot of those tattoos on him are his.
Wow.
You may have seen him in the movie 47. You may have seen him in 47 Ronin with Keanu Reeves.
No, I haven't seen that either. I figured that was all makeup.
That's a lot of that's him.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I was kind of hoping post-credit, mid-credit, something that we'd actually see remnants that he's alive. But hey, they can always bring him back later. Who stays dead in comic books or comic book movies?
Right. Well, the beauty of Diablo Ben is that he's possessed. So yeah. I mean, anybody can host that entity.
Yeah, like, he was super cool. I'm like, I have no idea who this is, but at first I was like, what are you doing with him? And then, you know what, that point where he kind of explained what happened with his family and everything, and now why he was trying to be the Zen guy, I'm like, dude, I can totally sympathize with this guy. It's like, he's supernatural, but he's human at the same time.
Well, it was really awesome. A couple of the times when he was using the fire, just like as examples, you saw the reflection of the Aztec in the fire.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
It was really cool.
No, I just saw the figures made out of the fire. That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, okay, this guy's going to do something big. And oh boy, did he ever.
I like the campfire he made inside that building with the three floors above them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty darn awesome. I also love the character of Katana. I thought she was great. I thought she was wasted. I thought she was a little underused, but I liked the characterization.
She just seemed to be shoved in this movie. Like,
yeah,
like there was nothing to her, really.
She's another one. I don't know who she is, but I like the character they wrote. You know, it moved me when she was sitting there. You know, she's looking at the sword and trying to say, you know, talking to her dead husband, saying, you know, I might be with you soon. I'm like, no, I can feel for her. I have no idea who she is. She made a hell of an entrance when she shows up on that plane and asks Rick Flag, should I kill them?
Yeah, I was not crazy about the scene where she's talking to her dead husband in the blade, because that felt forced. That felt like they were like, okay, we need to have some kind of a backstory for her. Here's a good spot to put it in. And I think they could have waited on that. If they were going to do a sequel, they could have slipped it right in there.
I could have seen that. And I liked that when they were at the bar and they said, you know, drinking to crime. And she's like, I'm not a criminal.
Yeah, which was a nice touch.
So that was cool. Well, let's also talk. We haven't even brought up Rick Flagg. I think he was one of the weakest characters.
I don't know who the actor is. I don't. I vaguely remember reading him in the comics. He didn't seem to be that big of a deal. They didn't seem to quite know what to do with him here. I mean, I like the Delta Force thing that he had going. I don't really understand where he tied into the plot. I don't know if all that was from the books.
It is.
But he is sort of meh. Well, you know what? He was a bad guy who was actually a good guy, but he didn't fit in with these characters because they were all just... He was out of his league, really.
Well, he's Amanda's arm. Like, you know, Amanda's not going to go on there, so you have to have a representative for Amanda Waller with the team, and that's what Rick Flagg's really is.
Oh,
his
so,
character has been so, since they in the comics too.
Oh, so he's kind of her. Boring. So he's her Maria Hill then.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Rick Flagg was actually, I think, a holdover from the original Suicide Squad from 1959.
Yeah, at least his ancestor was supposedly fought in that division of the Suicide Squad, the original creation of it.
Yeah, because they weren't supervillains back then.
No, they were part of I don't know if they were bad guys. They weren't supervillains, but I think they were bad guys that they used to fight in World War II.
No, it was they were military people and such, but you know, they went on suicide missions. That's why they called them the Suicide Squad.
Hmm. Yeah, they showed up in a lot of Brave and the Bolds and
exactly. Starting this is pre Justice League, pre you know, all that.
Oh yeah. Way back.
Yeah. I didn't like the character of the Enchantress either.
I don't know who the character was from the comic, the character in the movie. She looked awesome. I don't really, like, when she was in the witch form, she looked awesome. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish. I don't know who her alter ego was. I didn't, you know, the actress was, you know, she was equivalent to the paint on the wall. You know, I don't know. I mean, it was a cool plot. I liked the plot. It seemed like they didn't quite know, like they came up with this cool idea and didn't quite know what to do with it.
The villains were absolutely the weakest part of the movie. Mm-hmm. There was no real feeling like, ooh, this is going to be, you know, oh, I can't wait to see how these guys match up with them. When she's a voodoo queen of Baton Rouge, very cool looking. And then partway through the movie, she becomes Evil Lyn from Masters of the Universe. And I was like, nope.
Yeah, the way her body was moving and everything, it looked like, oh, God, I've seen better moves on Power Rangers.
But there, I will say this. The first time she transforms in the war room.
Oh, that was awesome.
And it grabs her hand and turns. I'm like, that's all you have to do to make it a convincing character.
That was freaking cool.
And if they had left it at that, that would have been like the coolest part of the movie, end of story. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, she's the villain that they're facing. And her large brother, who has no name. And it's like, this is a villain that we can all get behind.
Yeah, that's funny. It sort of came out of nowhere, but
really left field.
It's amazing, isn't it, in these superhero movies, how they get the villain just wrong so often?
You know what? I have a feeling it was less about them getting it wrong and more about... I kept getting the sense from this that the footage, they had what was basically a four-hour-long movie, and they had to cut a bunch of stuff out, and I have a feeling... If they ever do like a extended cut or a director's cut, or
they will,
I have a feeling we'll see more of the story, and it won't seem quite so left field. Perhaps
I think if you're having to do that, then you're probably not making movies correctly.
Possibly.
In the movie, the Enchantress is a bad guy, no matter what. Amanda had her heart though, and that's how she was able to control her.
Right, which is exactly how they were able to control Davy Jones in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, who also had a very odd voodoo queen from Baton Rouge.
Exactly. Now, wait a minute. That's funny. I didn't draw that parallel. And
I did the moment I saw her. I was like, oh! Funny.
Yeah, I didn't think about it at all, because I liked that character, and then here I am saying the Enchantress seemed to be a little bit half-baked. I'm like, wait a minute.
It's because now stuff with the other one.
Now, but see, now I'm not sure if I like the Enchantress thing more or if I like the Davy Jones thing less now. Crap.
I did find it interesting that the only review of this that I have read so far is the one from a good friend of the station, John Ostrander, because I wanted to hear his take on seeing his team that he created, brought to life, and even though he had I think throughout the comic, throughout a pretty long stretch, he had the Enchantress being the bad guy, even he said that in the movie, the bad guy is pretty much the weakest part of the movie.
That's funny.
I'm like, you did that yourself. But
well, something was, else. Oh, go ahead, Ashley.
Oh, I was just going to say, something else that kind of bothered me was it felt kind of the Suicide Squad being put together and then sent out on a mission felt kind of abrupt. Like, I know this is a little, probably a little bit of a cliche, but I would have liked to see at least a little training montage or maybe send them out on a mini mission, something like that, to give you a chance to kind of see the team together in action. Because I was actually kind of surprised when they were deployed. Like, oh, wait, this, they're actually sending them after this big bad villain, and they're pretty much untested. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
But think about it. Come on, Captain Boomerang, you know, set up that one bad guy. Oh, go ahead. Let's get out of here.
Slipknot. We don't need
exactly.
Do not forget his name, dear sir. Give him credit.
Why? Nobody in the movie was going to give him credit.
No. That's funny. He was just there, and then he was gone all of a sudden.
The minute he stepped into the courtyard with the rest of them, I'm like, your head's gone.
Well, it's funny because they show him, he's there, and I'm like, wait, that's the guy from Windtalkers. I'm like, oh, I didn't know, you know, I wonder what they're going to do with him. He was dead 5 minutes later. I'm like, oh, yeah. All right.
But well, I love how Boomerang talked him into it.
That was funny.
You know, just to prove that they did have the things in their necks.
It would have been nice if that was intentional, but it didn't seem intentional. Like, they could have, you're right there. If they had given Boomerang that kind of savvy, that he actually, you know, wanted him, talked him into it so he could try it and see if it's a test it, right? And just sort of smiled afterwards or whatever, then I would have been like, wow, Captain Boomerang's got some depth to it. But they didn't.
And the fact is that when Disney, or when DC did the animated Assault on Arkham, they did it better. They did that exact same scene better.
They did. In fact, it's funny because I just watched that this weekend because I was just feeling like more Suicide Squad. And I have to say that Assault on Arkham is, if anybody out there is wanting more Suicide Squad,
that's definitely the word to go.
Pick that up because it is solid. There's a lot of similarities, but the script is smarter. The team is different, but it still works. They could have adapted that and probably had a much bigger hit on their hands.
Most definitely.
Mm-hmm. And let's of course not forget Killer Croc, which was an interesting character because he wasn't totally a bad guy, but he wasn't, you know, he was the creature and such. It almost seemed like they threw him in there. Oh, let's throw in another Batman villain.
You know,
because we couldn't get Bane or something.
Yeah.
He was a crazy, weird addition to this, but you know what? I think I really liked it because, yeah, he was just that. Like, he was just the mutant that they kept locked away, but he wasn't actually a bad guy. He was okay with being a freak, but he's fine with this mission because, you know, at least
no one else is going to do it.
Useful,
yeah.
Well, the thing it was though, I loved it when they tried to he was in his cell and they brought in all the officers to capture him, and he gets the one guy and throws him in the water and kills him, and the other officers, oh, that was the new guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, funny.
I had a hard time understanding them, actually. I thought it was a little too much. He didn't really do anything for me.
I do sort of wish that they had written a quick scene that would give him an excuse to say, I almost got him. But they didn't.
Yeah, I threw a rock at him. Would have been nice.
That would have been great.
If he had launched a large rock at somebody and like wiped out a bunch of them, and everybody looks up and he goes, it was a big rock, I'd have been happy.
God, that would have been the greatest
been so
moment
happy.
In that. That would have been that would have been the highlight moment of the movie.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Damn, maybe next time.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And it was funny, though, because, like, Will Smith's Deadshot was a likable character. He wasn't, like, an asshole or anything. Like
Dude, that. He was totally a stand-up guy in this.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, he's a hired hitman, you know, he's an assassin, but I totally got the sense that there was literally just his job. He wasn't psychotic. He knew how to kill people really well, but I got the sense that, you know, he was totally trained for it, and so he literally, I mean, even he had said, I don't kill women, I don't kill children, I only kill when I'm being paid for it. I'm like, so he gets this whole crazy life sentence, but I'm like, you know, obviously because, you know, it's illegal to take money to kill people, but it, you know, it's not like he was, a vigilante. You know, he killed that mob informant that was about to start, but that guy deserved it anyways.
Yeah, but how much of that was Will Smith and his agents having some script approval?
You know what? It was probably a lot of it, but yeah. It worked because, well, I mean, for me...
If it worked for you, it worked. That's awesome.
Well, you know, as a dad, I'm like, dude, I totally sympathize with this guy. I mean, I was in the Army. I couldn't shoot worth a shit. So, you know, I can't sympathize with that part, but I'm like, he's a good guy who just wants to do right. And, you know, he just... got a bad break or whatever, but
still got one of the creepiest scenes in the movie though, because at the end he's teaching his daughter, like, and you can just see the seeds are sown for her to become a master assassin as well. So
that was awesome.
That's kind of disturbing, but
I was thinking about
it's a great way to learn geometry.
It really is. I learned more from that scene than a lot of the other things.
Exactly. Me too. I'm like, man,
been 3 years of geometry.
I'm like, man, if my geometry teacher in high school had just explained it that way, I might have gotten it. Instead, they kept using shapes and this Greek crap to explain it. And you know what? I'm like, wow, give him a Parent of the Year award or not. Yeah. It probably was a lot of Will Smith's, you know, people that got that for him, but man, that guy. It's such a movie star. Like, his charisma is still there after 25 or 30 years of making these movies. I'm like, man, he still got the magnetic presence. And he's got, I mean, obviously he's going to show up in later movies. He has to. It was different than the versions of Deadshot I'd seen before. But, you know, I kind of like the reimagining.
Well, yeah, if he was a real badass, he would have taken shots at Batman right around his daughter or something.
Through.
Yeah, well.
Oh, I'm going to be the only one that says it. I see. He's the assassin. I'm the jerk. Okay.
He's Will Smith. What are you going to do?
I'll get a better agent.
Well, you end up on this show all the time.
Yeah. Get a better agent.
But yeah, I thought it overall for a team movie, I thought it worked really well. They all meshed very well together, and that was the cool thing about it. You know, they were ragtag.
We got more of that. I wish, you know, I think because it seemed like it was really, you know, the Will and Margot show. Mm-hmm. The rest of them were just kind of there. So, I get it, because, you know, both of them have huge presence, and they're the leads of this movie. With the Joker coming in to sort of sideswipe everybody, including, like, you know, really to overshadow the main bad guys, they could have done a lot more to beef up the characters and to make it. I mean, you know, we talked last week or 2 weeks ago about Star Trek Beyond. That was a team. That was a really a great use of a team and coordinating characters. This one, not as good, but still, I think we're seeing.
Well, which one of these characters would you compare to Cupcake from the Kelvinverse?
I don't know.
Okay, so
I can't think of the parallel either.
Nope. Let's go around, and any last thoughts before we rate this? What did you guys think of the ending scene?
The credit scene
the credit
scene. It was a nice touch because it told us that Amanda knew.
Yeah.
Because she's got that fabulous line of, you shouldn't work nights.
Yeah.
And obviously she's the one feeding Bruce the information on how to build the Justice League, which is a nice touch. But yeah, I you know, if it wasn't in the movie, I don't think it would have affected anything.
Right.
No.
It definitely is an after credit because it is leading up to the Justice League movie. So.
Yeah, and it felt a whole lot like the "Hi, General Ross, I'm Tony Stark, and I'd like to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative."
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Here you're having a Hulk problem.
Yeah. Nice suit.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it was nice to see that, and it was interesting that in the same files that she had, it had Aquaman and Flash in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to
see. She's tracking them all.
Oh yeah. Well, it's Waller, of course she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's cool. I like that. I like the fact that, you know, anybody who's seen the animated series or watched the, you know, read the books or whatever, you know that Amanda Waller doesn't, I mean, there's a reason she's called the Wall, and because she doesn't back down from anything.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that at the end, you know, there she is in front of Bruce Wayne. She knows who he is. She's not going to back down, though. The only thing about her in this movie that I don't know if I would have crossed that line is when she annihilated her entire staff just because Deadshot walked in.
No, I was on board for that.
Well, it definitely seemed like it was within her character, but I almost thought it was just a little too much.
You know what? No, I think she was planning to do that anyways. I think the fact that... It would have been the leave no witnesses thing. The fact that Deadshot and the rest of the Merry Group walked in on her might have sped up the timetable, but I have a feeling she wasn't leaving the room without killing them off anyways. Like, she was going to be the last one. I think it was always her plan, because even she said, oh, they didn't have the clearance for this.
I was actually really surprised that she was at the top of the building.
Yeah,
yeah, she was the one that they were saving. That took me. That was probably the biggest shock of the movie.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
You know, I'm just glad because, you know, when they show her, they bring her to the Enchantress, and that whole thing starts, and then they show her all sort of, you know, tied up in that energy or whatever. And for a brief second, I thought, wait a minute, they establish her. They're not going to kill her off, are they? You know, because I thought, probably not, because she's important, but then I thought, wouldn't be the first time you see a movie where all of a sudden they just off and kill somebody out of, you know, just for the sake of the story, and like, missed opportunity, could have used them. So,
yeah.
I was glad that they didn't do it. You know, it was a low chance, but I thought, would they actually do that? Maybe.
Well, they'd be fools if they did. Killing off Amanda Waller is about the dumbest thing you could do.
Well, they did it on Arrow, and that was awfully stupid, so...
I wonder if they did it because of this movie.
I think they did. I got that feeling, because... yep, like I said, she's important, and how... Wouldn't they? No. But then, yeah, I think they did do it on that show for the same reason, I think, you know, they got rid of Deathstroke and all that, because I think DC said, well, we're going to make these movies... And these minor characters and these supporting characters, we don't want you to use them on the TV show.
Well, Amanda Waller is a character that I could definitely see does not want any substitutes anywhere as impersonators. So she probably was the one behind the elimination of Amanda Waller on the TV show.
She might have killed her herself. Yeah, I mean, I know we saw somebody else on screen kill her, but man, that doesn't mean it wasn't her pulling those strings on the marionette.
Because as good as I thought the actress was who was in Arrow that played Amanda Waller, Viola Davis could eat her for breakfast.
Yeah.
And come back for seconds.
Like, do not mess with her.
No. All right, let's go around and rate this movie. 1 out of 5 stars, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. JD, you're first.
I'm going to give it a 4. I've been looking forward to it since they announced it. From the first trailer, I'm like, that looks like a hell of a lot of fun. And so when I went in, my expectations were that it was going to be the fun movie that it looked like from the trailer, and it absolutely was. I'm like, this movie's awesome, and I can't wait to get the DVD and watch it again.
Okay, awesome. Ashley?
I'm going to go with a 3 for this one. It
Lucius the characters, I would give the characters a solid 4. I thought Harley Quinn and Deadshot were really interesting, and El Diablo was a nice surprise. I really liked his character, but I thought overall the script and the editing was just a little bit choppy. So I think unfortunately it wasn't as good as it could have been, but I'm definitely looking forward to the sequel and seeing these characters again.
Okay. Alex?
I'm going to be the bad guy. 2.5. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that's not that bad. When you said the bad guy, I thought, crap, he's going to give it a 1. Take our whole average down.
No. 2.5. It's what I call funnel cake entertainment. It's certainly enjoyable. It's enjoyable while you're ingesting it, but at the end, there's nothing there. Nothing of real substance. There was way too much clearly Warner Brothers influence that went into the editing, and I think it hurt the movie tremendously. So for me, 2.5.
Okay. Mr. Mike.
I am going to go with a 3.75. I can't quite give it a 4, but I liked enough of it that it's going to be a little more than a 3 for me, particularly Margot Robbie just excels in the part of Harley Quinn, which I think is vital to the DC cinematic universe because when all is said and done, Suicide Squad is probably going to be known as the prequel to the Harley Quinn movie that's coming out. I have no doubt that if anything comes out of this, it's because she's going to get her own movie, hopefully with a little Poison Ivy added to it, and that could be the DC version of Thelma and Louise, which could be a lot of fun.
That would be a hell of a lot of fun. You know what? Did Paul Dini see this? Like, I wonder what his thoughts on Harley Quinn were. It's just something that occurred to me. I wonder if he approved her.
I don't know. I mean, he doesn't have to approve her, but that's a good question.
But it's more like, because people always ask Alan Moore, "What do you think?" And he can't stand that anybody has the gall to adapt his things, and so he automatically disproves of it. So, but then, you got the creators that are like, I approve, it was great, and then, I didn't mean like legal approval, I just wonder if he was satisfied, or if he watched this and said, what'd they do to that character? I'm just curious what he thought of it.
Of course. It'd be interesting to see. Alright, my rating, I'm going to do a 3.5. I overall really enjoyed, and it was a lot of fun. I liked a lot of the characters. The Joker left me a little flat, and some of the other characters I thought were wasted, like Boomerang, and I thought Rick Flagg was a wet mop. And But Harley was awesome. I liked Deadshot, even though it was just Will Smith from any other movie that he was in. And, I liked Diablo was awesome. Diablo was fantastic. The thing that also brought it down to a 3.5, I was at the scene where they were at the bar, and I was already starting to look at my phone. So it was like, okay, what time is it? How much longer of this movie? So when that does it, it kind of scares me and goes, nah, this might not be a 4-star movie for me. And then also, the scene of seeing whatever the museum or the city hall where they were at and seeing the big thing circling in the sky with the lightning coming from it. And it's like, oh, Gozer!
I approve of that.
I was expecting her to say, are you a god?
It did have that feel to it.
It did. It really did. But, like I said at the beginning, which was the better Ghostbuster movie of the summer. So we will see. We want to hear from you guys at home. Write us, ESOpodcast@gmail.com. I will go out and say I did enjoy this a lot more than I did Batman v Superman. And I enjoyed Batman v Superman, too.
One random question. In the theater that you watched this movie in, were there little kids? Like, were there parents that brought their little kids?
No.
Okay, because I went to an 8 o'clock showing in this movie, and there was parents that walked in with their kids, and these kids were like 6 or 7. I'm like, what is... I'm like, seeing the commercials, this is not... the characters that you these see are, on the Justice League cartoon.
But JD, these are the same people that brought their kids to see probably Deadpool.
Yeah, you're right. Yep. Yeah, never mind. Enough said. Some parents just, you know, they don't have that responsibility quirk that some of us try to have. So, never mind. Exactly. Okay.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the con report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about more survival trips for Dragon Con. Last week, I talked about making lists for packing and making sure you have stuff to stay hydrated. Well, this week, I'm going to talk about making the most of your trip when you get there. Now, you can plan a little beforehand, and some of it you can plan at the con. Some of the Dragon Con schedule will be out before the con, and some of the stuff going on, you'll have to wait to check out the program book once you're there. This helps you know when there are panels or autographs that you may want to get, and the best times to get them, or the only times that you can if they're a panel. I'm a big fan of all the music acts that generally play Dragon Con, so I try to check out a lot of the concerts while I'm there. I plan my schedule around them. I also do panels, so I have to be mindful of when those are so I don't miss them, since I'm speaking on them. I also like attending a lot of the dances and other fun events, so having an idea of when they are, if they require me to wait in a line, and when I have some downtime so I can wear my costumes or see my friends is really good to know, so that I don't forget stuff and get stressed out over missing what I wanted to do. Also, knowing when to go to the dealer's room helps, so you don't have to wait in that super long line, which goes outside. So probably not going right when they open is a really, really good idea. Well, I hope some of these helped. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Probably more stuff for Dragon Con. So thanks for listening, and I will see you guys next week.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, we've got a few places and events that you can see ESO Network personnel at this month. August 14th is the Atlanta Comic Convention, and that is at the Marriott Century Center, and just a little north of Atlanta. And it's a one-day show. It's a great show. It's a small little show, but you can get some great deals on comics there and meet up with some great people. There's a lot of people that come to this, I think more and more. And some in costume, and there's a lot of talent there as well, as far as artists and writers and friends of the show, friends of the station. Bobby Nash will be there. Jason Flowers will be there. Jason Flowers is an internet sensation these days.
Yes, he is. I am so proud of that boy.
And
I was so happy to see what he did.
So you can go and shake his hand. There may be some Funko figures if you get there before Mike Faber does.
Exactly. I have my pickup truck ready to go.
Exactly.
I'll just back it up to the con. Load him up, boys. Mike, put it on the ESO credit card.
Mike and I will definitely be there. We don't have a table, so we're just going to be kind of hanging around. So if you do want to meet up with us, please reach out to us and let us know you're going to be there so we can say howdy to you. And then the weekend after that, August 19th, is the Speakeasy Electro Swing, that monthly event that happens at the Red Light Cafe in Atlanta, Georgia. And, of course, Q will be spinning the tunes, and there's going to be some burlesque numbers. It's very nice. It is the last one before Dragon Con, so definitely want to work on your dance moves before the big event. And then August 28th through the 29th, that's dangerously close to Dragon Con, is FumpFest in Chicago, Illinois. Yes, I said FumpFest, FUMPFEST. We talked about this last year because the members of the Flopcast love FumpFest. And in fact, one of the members of the Flopcast, Cornflake, will be there. And she will be, I believe, demonstrating, teaching dementia water aerobics. So that's got to be something that someone's going to have to video that, because I'm going to need to see that. And I will not make it to Chicago, unfortunately, that weekend. So somebody's going to need to video that and put that it doesn't have to be online. They can just send it to me privately if they want, because I definitely want to see this. Dementia water aerobics. Sounds cool. That's reason enough to go. And then the big event itself at the end of August. It's really the beginning of September, Labor Day weekend, September 2nd through the 5th. It is Dragon Con. There be dragons here. Yes, it's less than 4 weeks away, and a lot of representatives from the ESO network are going to be there. Too many to name, but we are going to have a blast. We are still getting our schedules together, so we will be able to let you know when and where you will be able to see us on various panels.
When? Where? How?
I do believe that ESO will have a panel in the Sci-Fi Classics track room.
Yes, we will.
And that is on a very unique subject that we haven't covered before.
I'm surprised we haven't. But then again, we did have Bobby Nash, and he was so anti-musical.
That's true. That's true.
So we are going to be talking all about, you ready for this? I am so excited about this one. We are going to be looking at the anniversary of Little Shop of Horrors.
And that's the musical, not the original movie.
No, not the Jack Nicholson version. We are looking with the Rick Moranis, Steve Martin version.
Gotcha. Now, is it an anniversary of the movie or the play?
It is of the movie.
Gotcha. There's many different versions.
Oh, of course. It's the 30th anniversary of Little Shop of Horrors.
That just makes me feel old.
Yep. It's going to be Saturday at 4 p.m. in the Marriott, room M103 through M105. That's the American Classic Sci-Fi.
It has moved.
It has moved. It's not in the same place on the bottom floor of the Marriott. So look for us, and we're going to be in a better room. We're not going to be in a Tetris-shaped room, which is pretty darn awesome. And it should be great talking all about Little Shop of Horrors. And you never know, Mike Gordon might break into song.
I might. But I wouldn't bet on it. But I might.
Exactly. You know, we might get a sing-along going. You know, we might get the dentist song going or something.
Exactly. Also, it should be noted that on Monday, the 5th, the cast of and crew of ESW will be in person recording an event for the very first time. So definitely want to check in on that. We are definitely hoping that we can have a full house for that. Yes, Jennifer, myself, Mike, and Mary Ogle will be there. It's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to the four of us actually being in the same room together.
You think our chemistry is good when we're on Skype together? Wait till we're in the same room.
We get along at all.
Exactly. We'll hate each other.
See us fall to our faces. It's going to be fantastic. Definitely looking forward to that. There's so much else going on. So many different panels. Like I said, we're going to try to organize it for you. But if you want to get real information on Dragon Con, you know where you can go. You can go right here. You can stay on the ESO network and go just a few rooms over in the station to the ESO Dragon Con Report. And we've been doing one of those a month, so you can catch up if you haven't listened to any of those. And we're going to record one, our last one, pre-Dragon Con. And we want to hear from you guys. We want you guys to be part of it. So if you are going to Dragon Con, and in any capacity, if you're going there as an attendee, a cosplayer, if you're going there as a panelist, if you're going there as a track director, a volunteer, and there's something that you want to promote or there's something that you're excited about, you can't wait, you want to share it with us, please, we definitely want to hear from you. So we've got, of course, our ESO phone line. We've got our email, so you can send us an audio clip. You can even write us if you want, and we'll read it. Or we've actually made it really easy. All you have to do is go to the ESO network page, and there is a recording device right there. You just need access, I think, on your...
Are we really going to read it? Are we really?
We can. We have done.
Okay.
And you can just record it right there on the website. As long as your computer has a microphone, you're good to go. So we just ask that it be no more than 3 minutes long and be, you know, somewhat safe. I mean, this is a PG-13 audience, so we don't want any sort of, like, you know, naughty bits in audio format. But although it is Dragon Con, so certain innuendo is allowed. Anyway, Dragon Con is the big thing, so after that, there's nothing. No, just kidding.
We don't have anything
after that, folks. There will be some cons after that, and if you've got a convention that you want us to help promote, or you've got a convention that you really want to rave about, if you have gone to FumpFest and you've experienced the Dementia Water Aerobics, we want to hear from you. So please contact us. We love talking about conventions.
All right, 3, 2. Well, that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank our crew for being here. Ashley, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you. It's been fun. It's been some interesting movies this summer. So I have been doing my reviews up on the ESO podcast, and then probably next week do the annual summer in review post.
Well, exactly. Well, you know what? You've done such a great job, and you're going to be back with us in 2 weeks. Why don't you take next week off?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I'll take a week, see if I can find my way out of the station here.
Well, ask JD. He knows some secret passages around here.
Yeah. Well, there's at least 4 different exits, and there might be a couple that Mike and Mike don't know about.
Okay, nice.
There's one behind a really large poster of Raquel Welch.
Oh, I get that one.
Thank you.
Anything you want to shout out about, Ashley?
Nothing in particular. Just thank you again for having me back, and I'm looking forward to the summer in review roundup that we always do, although I'm kind of nervous. I think my picks weren't necessarily good this year, but that's part of it.
Dude, a lot of predictions and crap weren't good this year. Some of it this summer was up and down.
That's a good way to put it, actually.
It really felt like an unusual summer. So, but I think we have some good stuff coming our way in fall and winter.
Yep, exactly. We've got a lot of great stuff coming. We're actually going to be doing quite a few movies in the fall and into the winter this year. So, actually pretty cool. All right, and Alex, thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure getting the chance to talk about movies with you guys.
Oh, no problem. So. And thanks for being our numbers guy, as always.
Yeah, you know.
And I hope tonight actually things are going better for you, my friend.
I appreciate that. Thank you, man. I don't really have a shout out. Just thanks for letting me be part of this. And it's always, like I said, I really do enjoy talking movies. So when the opportunity comes, it's a real pleasure.
Excellent. And JD, you made it out of the airlock.
Yeah. It was so cool being on the show again. This is
awesome. How the hell are we going to get back in?
Oh, we got the plunger here. Don't worry.
Hey. Yeah, well, there's the catapult too, but never mind. It was awesome talking with y'all again, and I'll try not to wait 3 years to be on again.
Well, it's not you who makes the decision. That's the great thing about it.
That's true. Burn.
So, anything you want to do a shout out about, sir?
My daughter on Thursday, she's going to be 12, and I can't believe it, but she's my little Star Wars fan. She's so excited that there's going to be a new trailer for Rogue One the night of her birthday. I swear Lucasfilm just sent her a birthday card and said, here you go. So, time flies. I can't believe she's about to be 12, but so there's my shout out. To my baby girl, who's just not a baby anymore.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. That's very cool. And, of course, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure, sir.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
So I want to give a big shout out to Jerry Robinson, who is the creator of the Joker. We just saw Suicide Squad, and for all their haste to put this movie together, they seem to have forgotten who created one of the main characters. In all the credits of the characters of Batman, created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger, they didn't acknowledge a bunch of people, but I did not see Jerry Robinson's name, and I think that's a shame. It took a long time, over 50 years, for Bill Finger to finally be recognized. I think DC should take a page out of their book and thank the creator and his family of one of the premier characters for the last 75 years, one of the best villains that's ever been created, and give Jerry Robinson his due as the creator of the Joker.
That is awesome. Yeah, I was actually surprised when I did not see anything, you know, Joker created by or anything like that.
It's they've never done it, and I, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things that they don't do unless I think somebody gets involved legally to make them do it.
That's weird and terrible.
But you know, I did see that. You know, like I said, it took a while for them to recognize Bill Finger, and I think Jerry Robinson needs his due as well.
Definitely. One of my favorite TV shows is actually coming back in September. They've just announced that Star Wars Rebels will be returning in September with all brand new episodes on Disney XD.
Have you seen the trailer for that? They released it at Celebration. That thing is going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. It is amazing. They kicked it out of the ballpark with the
end
of
this last season. I'm so excited that Grand Admiral Thrawn has been brought into the canon because of all characters. He deserved it, and it looks like they're handling him perfectly.
Mm-hmm. It looks great, and I've really enjoyed Rebels. I was a little worried at first, but it has grown on me, and they picked up right where Clone Wars ended, and I really am very thrilled with what they've done.
There's a friend of mine, he doesn't watch the show, but I recommended it to him. I told him the first five or six episodes are a little wonky, a little bit silly, but I said it takes off like a jet after that. Kanan Jarrus has become my favorite character out of this new canon they've established. He's so well-rounded, and he's so well-played by Freddie Prinze Jr., and that plot twist that happened to him at the end of the second season, I can't wait to see how they handle that.
Mm-hmm. It'll be real interesting to see.
And that's going
to
be awesome.
Yep. So let's hope everything goes well with it. And like I said, September 24th on Disney XD. Highly recommend it. So that is going to wrap it up for this week. Of course, we want to hear from you at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Show is, of course, brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com store. So please, and we do emphasize on please, help support the station. And Mr. Mike, we have a new way for people to get in touch with us to talk about Dragon Con.
Absolutely. Well, we're definitely encouraging everybody to talk to us about Dragon Con until August 20th, where we're going to put the last Dragon Con report episode together before the big event. So we want to hear from you guys. We want you to call our phone line. We want you to send us an audio clip via email. And of course, you can go to ESO Podcast, and you can, with just a couple clicks, you can do a recording right there. And we ask that it be no more than 3 minutes long, and no curse words that we have to work really hard to bleep. We want to hear
what you guys.
We want to find out what you guys are excited about this year at Dragon Con. So please reach out and tell us.
Exactly. And when you do the one thing on the ESO website, if you're going to do that, it's 90 seconds. So just be aware of that. And I might as well make the announcement right here. For those who are going to Dragon Con, we're proud to announce that we are going to be doing an ESO network meet and greet. We are going to be doing it Friday night at Dragon Con at the 22nd Story Bar in the Hyatt Regency. So please stop by at 10 p.m. and we'll probably go to about midnight. And Mike will be there. I'll be there. We have a couple other shows that will be joining us. I know Adam and JP will be there. The Cigar Nerds are going to be there. I think the Caster Quest is going to be there. So we're going to have some great crew members, you know, there. So please come on out, say howdy, and just hang out with us. We would love to do it. You know, we never know. We can get some buckets of rum all together. So with that being said, we'll be back next week, speaking of other shows, and we're going to back and doing an old-fashioned geek talk where anything is on the table where we could talk about. We could talk about Dragon Con. We could talk about what's we're looking forward to in the fall. We're talking about other things that we just haven't talked about on the podcast. What comics are you reading? What books are you reading? Speaking of books, there might be some ESO news coming out with books, but that's for a future podcast after Dragon Con. But anyway, I'm digressing. We will talk to you next week. My name is Mike Faber, and we'll see you then. Peace. And we're done. Yay.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Earth Station 1.
Bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.